We have the pleasure today of having a speaker from Birmingham. His name is Mr. Trevor Hanson, and he is to speak to us on the subject, Israel in Bible Prophecy. He's also asked for an introductory reading, so I shall now hand you over. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I don't have a religious background. In fact, I used to argue with my RE teacher that God existed. And I hadn't any kind of religious teaching. My mum was teaching me about the difference between right and wrong, but that was about as far as it went. So I would have called myself an agnostic verging on atheism. But I did enjoy history at school and geography. And I was about 22 when I first bumped into Christadelphians, but I wasn't baptised till I was in my 30th year. And it was only something that made me really get down to Bible study. And when I got down to it, I was utterly convinced that God exists. And one of the things that really made me think about it was Israel. And that's the subject we're looking at now, Israel in Bible Prophecy. And when we look at the Bible, we can see how the nation of Israel is really a living witness to God, of his truth and the Lord that he talks about in the Bible. And this is what God regards Israel. It says in Isaiah 43, "You are my witnesses, says the Lord, and my servants whom I have chosen, that you may know and believe me and understand that I am he. Before me there was no God formed, nor shall there be after me." So here we see how that God is using the nation of Israel to be his servant, to show forth his words to the people upon this earth, in line with that hymn that we've just been singing. So why is the Bible largely about Israel? Well, in one of the early books of the Bible, in the book of Deuteronomy, this is what God says. He says, "For you are a holy people to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for himself, a special treasure of all the peoples on the face of the earth." So yes, they are a special treasure. I mean, we all love children, but I think my children are more special than your children, and vice versa. You would think exactly the same. So you can understand how God is thinking about Israel as his special people, as special children. Amos says, "Hear this word that the Lord has spoken against you, O children of Israel, against the whole family which I brought up from the land of Egypt, saying, you only have I known of all the families of the earth. Therefore I will punish you for all your iniquities." So what he's saying is, like we do with our children when they misbehave — I'm not saying yours was misbehaving, David — but when our children misbehave, what we do is we punish them in some way or another. And this is what God does with the nation of Israel. He teaches them a lesson. So he goes on, and so we need to look, where did it all begin? And in that hymn that we just sang, Genesis is the beginning of Abraham, who's the father of the Jewish family. But both Muslims trace their links back to the days of Abraham as well. And this is what God said to Abraham. "Now the Lord had said to Abraham, get thee out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you and curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So God called Abraham out of a land called Ur of the Chaldees. And Ur of the Chaldees has been excavated. Archaeologists discovered it around about 1956. And they found that it was a city, a similar size to Coventry. Yay! And it was a fair size, similar population. And they had buildings that were 6 or 7 stories high. So it wasn't mud bricks. It was quite a civilized society, almost like Coventry. And we see how that there they worshipped the moon. They found these ancient temples, and the moon was the deity whom they worshipped. And God called Abraham out of this kind of society who worshipped the moon to follow him and to follow his ways. And that's why Abraham is blessed, because of his faithfulness. So he left Ur of the Chaldees, just over here. Whoops, that wasn't supposed to happen. Left Ur of the Chaldees over there. Oh, it's not. Ah, no, wrong. Let's go on. Come on. There we go. Left Ur of the Chaldees and journeyed up through the Tigris and Euphrates Valley, and then crossed over and came down, wandered round the Sinai into Egypt, and back again. about a journey of about 2,000 miles all told. And so he didn't know where he was going to go, what he was going to do, but he put his faith and trust in God. And I think that happens to many of us in our journey in the truth. We don't know where life is taking us on our journey. We know our ultimate end, because God has told us what it's going to be, but our journey in between, we're just not quite sure about it and what events may befall us along the route. So Abraham journeyed to a land that God had promised him. And yet, he said to Abraham that, you know, when your descendants come out, they're going to have to be slaves. So he said to Abraham, now certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs. They will serve them and they will afflict them for 400 years. And also the nation whom they serve, I will judge. Afterward, they shall come out with great possessions. And we know our Bible Sunday school stories. Abraham's family went down into Egypt at the times of Joseph. And then a Pharaoh arose who knew not Joseph, and they were treated harshly, and so they left. And the punishment was inflicted upon Egypt, the most powerful nation in the world at that time. They were called a super nation in those days, I suppose, like America is these days. And their army was completely annihilated. And the blessing was that God would show his power over the nations of the world. And that nation came out and established their land. They journeyed it out through Goshen, to the wilderness, across to the Sinai, and then up into a land that was to become the land of Israel. And so God gave them the land that he promised to Abraham. Why did God do this? Well, God says, it's not because of your righteousness or the uprightness of your heart, the nation of Israel, that you're going to possess their land, but because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord your God drives out from before you, and that he may fulfill the word which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac and Jacob. So it wasn't because they were super people, they were a difficult people, God says, but the people who were living in the land that was to become Israel were doing terrible things, and they were sacrificing their children as life sacrificing and burning them. And God had said, no, we're going to remove that. And so he gave that land to the children of Israel and told them that they had to follow his ways. Well, over the course of time, the children of Israel reject God as being their king. And they want a physical king who they could worship, like all the nations around them. And so there was Saul and then David. And David is given a promise. And this is what David says in 1 Chronicles 28. He says, of all the sons of my father, he liked me to make me king over all Israel. That was King David. And of all my sons, for the Lord has given me many sons, he has chosen Solomon, my son, to sit upon the throne of the kingdom of the Lord over Israel. I'm going to look at that a little bit later in the exhortation. And so this is the land that David was to possess as king, and he was to pass it on to his son Solomon. But the interesting thing is where it says, the throne of the kingdom of the Lord over Israel. So this kingdom that David ruled is to do with God. It's his kingdom, but David is ruling it on his behalf. And so we see how much that Israel is a part and parcel of God's plan and purpose with the world in which we live. Well, time goes by and we come to a time when the children of Israel, because of their bad behaviour, have been exiled into the land of Babylon. And Daniel, one of the prophets, gives a plan, a prophecy of a plan of world events and what's going to take place. I remember reading this in my office when I was employed years ago. I was reading it in my office and a guy comes walking past. Oh, Trev, what are you reading? And I said, it's the Bible. And he was a Methodist. And he said, wow, what bit are you reading? And I said, oh, I'm reading about world events in Daniel. He says, whereabouts is that bit in the Bible? I've never ever heard of Nebuchadnezzar's image, and it just shows you that we can read it and just pass through it. And he only read really the New Testament. He was a Methodist, but he only read the New Testament thinking that the Old was irrelevant. But when we come to the Old Testament, we see how relevant it is, because God is giving a picture of things that will unfold over the centuries and millennia of time, and we can look back and see how accurate that was, and we can put our confidence in the fact that God said this would happen, and it came to pass. And you can put your faith and trust in something like that. And so he gives this image of a head of gold, and he says to Nebuchadnezzar, you are this head of gold. and then followed by arms and chests of silver, thighs of brass, and legs of iron, and feet of iron and clay, and that a stone was cut out of a mountain, and it's going to crush that image to pieces, and the great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation is sure. And then in Daniel 7, we have an imagery of beasts, the lion, the bear, the leopard, and a dreadful and terrible beast that was to represent a people yet to come who Israel wouldn't even know. And then ultimately, it brings about the time when the Lord Jesus Christ returns to the earth and establishes God's kingdom once more upon the earth. And that really is one of the great things I think about reading our Bibles, so much faith and trust in what we read there. So, because I was good at geography at school, I knew about the Babylonian Empire. I enjoyed history as well. And yes, it came to pass. You can look at any atlas and you can see the Babylonian Empire, followed by the Persian Empire. But the empires all control the land that we now know as was then, Israel. And it's because these empires control Israel that's the important thing. Again, we come to Alexander the Great and the Greeks. They conquered that part of the world as Israel too. And then we come to the Roman Empire. Once again, they controlled the land of Israel. The Romans occupied Israel at the time of Jesus. And Jesus was under the rulership of Pontius Pilate and the emperors of the day. And so we can see how these events came true over the course of time. So if God said something was going to come to pass, and we now know that it did, why then should we believe future events? So we move into the New Testament, where we read some prophecies regarding what was to happen. This is a prophecy when Jesus was entering Jerusalem. And in Luke he says, "Now as Jesus drew near, he saw the city and wept over it, saying, 'If you had known, even you, especially in this your day, the things that make for your peace, but now they are hidden from your eyes. There won't be any peace at this moment in time. For days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment around you, surround you, close you in on every side, and level you and your children within you to the ground. And they will not leave in you one stone upon another, because you did not know the time of your visitation,'" when Jesus was in their midst. And it's quite accurate, because the Romans, when the Jews rebelled against the Roman occupation, they came and built an embankment against the city walls of Jerusalem, and they had a siege for 18 months, and eventually they surrounded them, and eventually they captured the city. And very accurately, one stone was taken down from the temple after another, until the temple was completely razed. And if you look at the pictures of the West Wall, Wailing Wall now, it's just a big foundation on which stands a Muslim mosque. So quite accurate. And so that's what happened to the children of Israel. He goes on to talk about the Olivet prophecy. "When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. Let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those who are in the midst of her depart, and let not those who are in the country enter her." And interesting how that when Jerusalem was surrounded and besieged, Vespasian was then the general of the Roman army. The emperor had then died, and the Roman armies wanted Vespasian to become the new Roman emperor. So he journeyed with his supporters and became emperor, and left his son Titus in charge of the army. So there was a brief lull, and that was the opportunity for people to get out of the city, as Jesus had prophesied. "Let those who are in the midst depart, and let not those who are in the country enter in, for these are the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled." And so we see how these were accurately portrayed to us. He goes on to say, "For there will be great distress in the land and wrath upon this people, and they will fall by the edge of the sword and be led away captive into all nations. And Jerusalem will be trampled by Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled." So Jesus is continuing those prophecies that we were looking at in Daniel, the fulfillment of them. And so the city fell under Titus. And the Roman soldiers, seeing the temple covered with gold, wanted to get some of the spoils. And the fire ensued in the temple, and the gold melted between the stones. So the Roman soldiers took the stones apart one by one to get at the melted gold, to get some money for all their hard labours and work. And so every stone was taken down by the Roman soldiers, even though Titus didn't want to see it destroyed. The events are recorded for us. There's the Roman soldiers bringing back the menorah and other items of the table of showbread and the silver trumpets. And it's found on this arch, the Arch of Titus, that's there in Rome, as a memorial to the fact that they won. I think it says something like, "We came and we won." A bit like the Villa when they beat Coventry and things like that, you know. Who knows? You've got a good rugby team here, though. So you can see what happens is that these are recorded in history. These events took place. This isn't something, a myth or legend. These are actual events and facts that are sustained and proved by archaeologists and historians. It's incredible. I think the Bible really does come alive when we begin to read it. So anyway, the Jews were occupied by the Romans, and then the Emperor Adrian, who built that wall to keep David's relatives out of England and keep them up in Scotland. And Adrian heard of the trouble again in Israel, so he sent his armies down to the land of Israel. And in AD 135, he completely annihilated the Jews and scattered them as slaves throughout the world. And that's what Jesus had said. They will be scattered as exiles. But also, we read about it in Deuteronomy, one of the earliest books of the Bible, written about 1,500 before the days of Jesus. And it shall be that just as the Lord rejoiced over you to do you good and multiply you, that's what he wanted, to bless them, so the Lord will rejoice over you to destroy you and bring you to nothing. And you shall be plucked from off the land which you go to possess. Then the Lord will scatter you among all the peoples from one end of the earth to the other. There you shall serve other gods which neither you nor your fathers have known, of wood and stone. And that's what the Romans had. A plethora of gods, Mercury, whatever, all of them. Loads and loads of gods and goddesses, Venus, etc., etc. And they were scattered throughout the world. And among those nations, he goes on to say, you shall find no rest, nor shall the sole of your foot have a resting place. And the Jews have been persecuted from place to place. In your papers this morning, you'll see about the Labour Party, the anti-Semitism that's gone in there. Even today, thousands of years from these words, Semitism still exists, even in our civilised country. There the Lord will give you a trembling heart, failing eyes, and anguish of soul. Your life shall hang in doubt before you. You shall fear day and night and have no assurance of life. In the morning you would say, "Oh, that it were evening." And at evening you would say, "Oh, that it were morning," because of the fear which terrifies your heart and because of the sight which your eyes shall see. Fearful days for the Jews, and they'd be persecuted from one place to the next. So here we see, taken from Jerusalem, an exile into Babylon, an exile right the way across North Africa, used as slaves and traded right throughout the southern side of the Roman Empire, then taken up into the Roman Empire itself, scattered out through Spain and France, Italy and Greece as we now know it, and then later on into northern parts of Europe, into Germany, into Poland and into Russia, where of course we have the pogroms that developed in Poland, and the word ghetto comes from there because the Jews are herded into these places and captured and kept. And we see how the various places they go from one place to the next. Up in England, I don't know if anybody's been to York, fascinating place, right by the side of the River Ouse. There's a tower there, and there's a plaque where several hundred Jews were in fear of their lives and they fled to this big stone tower, and the good old compassionate English put fire there and burnt them all alive, because that's the kind of people that the people are. So even in our country we see how Jews were persecuted. That was around about 1100, but they were expelled eventually from England in 1290 and they fled to other parts of the world. It's a fact of life. This is from an encyclopedia showing what had happened to the Jews over the course of their history. Well, the Roman Empire came and went. It was taken over by the Byzantine Empire, but then as the Muslims gained more and more power throughout the world and that the part of the Middle East, they conquered. First they broke up Byzantine Empire, which was the eastern side of the Roman Empire. Then they came over to try to conquer the western part of the Roman Empire and got as far as Vienna, and they were defeated then. in 1863, but they conquered all the way across North Africa. And this was the Ottoman Empire, and it lasted for about 400 years or so up there. And it was a powerful empire. And of course, Israel is there, but doesn't exist on the maps. Of course, they just had the land, and it was absorbed into the Ottoman Empire. And that's what ISIS want to try and achieve again, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. They want to re-establish the caliphate and the rulership of the Ottoman Empire and get back to what they were 400 years ago. But over the course of time, the Ottoman Empire began to shrink back. And then we had the First World War. And at the end of the First World War, Turkey was on the losing side, and so the Ottoman Empire was broken up and fractured. And gradually, Tunis became under French rule. This part of Libya was towards independence. Egypt became under British rule. Various people up here became under various rule and auspices of other nations. Russia, the Crimea up there. Crimea, they just took that back, of course, from Ukraine. And of course, here we see how this part of the world was used by the British and the French. And at the end of the First World War, it was Sykes-Picot Agreement that split up that part of the world as to how the British and the French saw it as in their empires and in their interests. But at the end of the First World War, an interesting thing took place, that the Jews wanted to re-establish in their homeland. And so a group of Zionists, those who wanted to re-establish Israel, decided to write and seek some kind of clarification from the British government. And so Lord Rothschild wrote, and a letter to dear Lord Rothschild, I have much pleasure in conveying to you on behalf of His Majesty's government the following declaration of sympathy with Jewish Zionist aspirations, which has been submitted to and approved by the British Cabinet. His Majesty's government view with favour the establishment in Palestine. Palestine, because the Romans, when they scattered Israel out of it, called the land Judea Palestinia. And that's where we get the word Palestine from. So, for the Jewish people, and will use their best endeavours to facilitate the achievement of this object, being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of the existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, the Arabs who live there, or the rights and political status enjoyed by the Jews in any other country. Remember, the Jews are scattered throughout the world. I'll be grateful if you bring this to the knowledge of the Zionist Federation. And so with this letter started this impetus to give the Jews their homeland back. But it wasn't until the events of the Second World War, when the persecution of 6 million Jews and the slaughter of 6 million Jews really brought the world to its senses. And at the end of the Second World War, there was a big push to get the Jews back to their homeland because of the atrocities of the Second World War. So in 1948, in May the 14th there, the State of Israel is born. And when you read the article in the paper, it talks about the first independent Jewish state in 19 centuries. Incredible when we think of that. God had said He's going to scatter you throughout the world, but He will gather you back as a people. And it talks about that straight away the battle for Jerusalem raged, most of the city falling to the Jews and Arabs fighting over it. There were the Egyptian Air Force shoots down Spitfires, bombs Tel Aviv. America recognizes the Jewish state, and here it talks about the events and two columns cross the southern border. The settlers are taken as prisoners of war. They were attacked from the south, the north, and the east by all the surrounding Arab nations. 750,000 Jews against 30 million Arabs, and they managed to survive. Incredible, isn't it? Well, this is what God says through the prophet Ezekiel. Therefore say, thus says the Lord God, although I have cast them far off among the Gentiles throughout the world, and I've scattered them among the countries, yet I shall be a little sanctuary for them in the countries where they go. Therefore say, thus says the Lord God, I will gather you from the peoples, assemble you from the countries where you've been scattered, and I will give you the land of Israel. Judeo-Palestinian, they didn't know what to call the land, and in 1948, Israel was back in existence. And so Jews returned to the land of Israel from all over initially Europe and North Africa, where it's in red, it's over 1,000 Jews returning. In green, it's 10,000. And where it's in blue, Morocco, Poland, Romania, it's 50,000. But 1 million returned from Russia following Perestroika and Glasnost and the freeing up of Russia. And incredibly, 1 million Jews went back to the land. So nearly 750,000 in 1948, and the numbers have increased incredibly. That's exactly what Jesus said. And they shall fall by the edge of the sword, they shall be led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. For in 1948, they fought to fight to capture Jerusalem for the Jews, and they were successful to a large part. So we look at the history of Jews, the Gentiles. It was destroyed by the Romans, Jerusalem in AD 70, the Jews banished in 135, conquered by the Persians, the Byzantines, Muslims, Turks. Richard the Lionheart, Crusaders, was asked by the Pope to go win the land back, the Holy Land back for Christians. Muslims under Saladin took it again, Mameluke Turks, Ottoman Turks, and the British in 1917. Then in 1967, the Israelis, after the Six-Day War, conquered Jerusalem in totality. Although there's still what they call an Arab quarter. So in 1967, I can remember this, we had a black and white TV back in those days, about as big as my laptop actually, so 14-inch screen. And I can remember as a young lad, in 1967, we'd won the World Cup, so we was in very good standing. And I remember these tanks racing across the Sinai Desert in black and white, big clouds of sand billowing behind them. It meant nothing to me at the time. But when you look back now, you think, wow, I was a 16-year-old, 16 when that happened. Meant nothing as a teenager. I had more important things to think about, football and all that kind of stuff and girls. But then, you know, you look back and you think, wow, to be able to alive and see these events in your lifetime taking place, absolutely incredible. And I mean, we live in fascinating times now. But Egypt expelled the United Nations Emergency Peace Force that were there, and that were in the Sinai Peninsula, that had been there since 1957 to keep the peace. And then they attacked. And Syria attacked and Jordan attacked. And at the war's end, Israel gained control of the Sinai Peninsula, the Gaza Strip, where we still have trouble, the West Bank, eastern Jerusalem and the Golan Heights. The results of the war affect the geopolitics of the region to this day. And if you look at the news, there was a Russian helicopter and a Russian jet shot down near the Golan Heights. And Syria have shelled Israel from the Golan Heights in this last week, so it's still a problem ongoing, as God said it would be. Israel's population was 750,000 in 1948. This was an article from the Jerusalem Post in the 1st of May 2006. For the first time since the first century, there are more Jews living in Israel than in any other country. And within 30 years, the majority of Jews in the world will be living here, according to one of Jerusalem of Israel's top demographers. So yeah, the word of God is being fulfilled as we live. People coming back to their homeland. I will gather you from where you've been scattered, said God. And yet we see the Arab opposition to the nation of Israel, foretold in the Bible. Do not keep silent, O God. Do not hold your peace and do not be still, O God. For behold, your enemies make a tumult, and those who hate you have lifted up their head. They have taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted together against your sheltered ones. They have said, come, let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be remembered no more. And Aminadab, the president of Iran, now not in power, said he wanted to cut Israel off from being a nation and drive them into the sea. Almost quoting the words of Psalm 83. Interesting enough, in the United Nations, the Palestinian Authority are now taking Britain to court because of the events of 1917 and how they divided the land up, and they want compensation now off Britain and France for the actions of the First World War, which just shows you it's an ongoing problem, and that it's every day you can read about these things. And Jerusalem, although it's quiet at the moment, is a burdensome stone. Zechariah says, it shall happen in that day that I will make Jerusalem a very heavy stone for all peoples. All who would heave it away will surely be cut in pieces. All nations on the earth are gathered against. Every American president that comes to power has a problem with Israel and Jerusalem. What do you do? The roadmap to peace. Do you hear about it anymore? All disappeared by the wayside. America can't trust Russia, and Russia can't trust America. Russia's to the north of Israel now, with Syria, and of course we read about the Russian involvement with their planes and helicopters just recently. So events conspiring to come about, and this is what God said: proclaim this among the nations, prepare for war, wake up the mighty men, let all the men of war draw near, let them come up, beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Do you know, the Americans sell billions upon billions of dollars on armaments, and armament is one of the biggest industries worldwide. A massive amount of money spent. Even poor countries arm themselves with weapons and rifles and guns and tanks, helicopters, to show that they are strong. Assemble and come round, all you nations, gather together all around, cause your mighty ones to go down there, O Lord. Let the nations be awakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there I will sit to judge all the surrounding nations. And Jeremy Bowen, BBC correspondent, celebrated 25 years as the BBC's war correspondent a few years back, and he said, the last century we've just been through has been the worst century in the history of mankind for warfare. First World War, Second World War, trouble in Europe, trouble in Africa, trouble all around the world. Incredible. Communism, Sovietism, it's war, the most violent century we've ever had in the history of mankind. Exactly what God says, prepare for war. Well, there will be an invasion of Israel, because God said, you will come up against my people Israel like a cloud to cover the land. It will be in the latter days, towards the end when Christ returns, that I will bring you against my land. As God said, it's my land. David was a king ruling it on his behalf, so that the nations may know me when I am hallowed in you, O Gog, before their eyes. And a confederate of nations headed up by Gog will be destroyed in the same way that Pharaoh's mighty army was destroyed when they were chasing the Israelites out of Egypt and across the Red Sea. They were destroyed that people might know that God was in control and could destroy the most powerful nations. And a similar scenario will befall Gog and these armies that come up against Israel. Jesus' words, there will be signs in the sun, in the moon, in the stars, our political changes, and on the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, talking about peoples not knowing what they to expect, men's hearts failing them for fear and the expectation of those things which are coming on the earth. For the powers of heaven will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in cloud with power and great glory. So he's given us this picture at a time of fear and worry. And let's face it, a lot of people now staying at home for their holidays, they're fearful of going abroad and the events that might take place. But they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. And that's what we're looking for, yes. A time of difficulty, a time of tribulation, a time of fear. But Jesus says, now when these things begin to happen, look up, lift up your heads, because your redemption draws near. Yes, a difficult time ahead lies for mankind, but the end result is that Christ will return to the earth and that bring about a peace upon it, and that heaven will be ruled here upon earth. As Jesus says in his prayer, my thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, and peace will ultimately be brought. For us though, take heed to ourselves, lest your heart be weighed down with carousing and drunkenness and the care of this life, and let the day come upon you unexpectedly. For will come a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch therefore and pray always that you be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man. So as individuals, we can't change events in the world. We can have no impact on it at all. But we can be careful of how we live our lives and how we relate to those around us, and not show fear or anxiety, but a confidence, because we know what is coming upon the earth. Thank you.